The conference finals are set in the NBA playoffs. I'm Brian Gibberman here on the Podium Game Podcast. As we've done the whole time, we're going to continue previewing every series. We're going to start out east with the Atlanta Hawks versus the Cleveland Cavaliers. Jacob Rosen waiting for next year in nylon calculus for the Cavs perspective. Brad Rollin from Peachtree Hoops and Fansided for the Hawks perspective. Since it's the conference finals, we're just going to bring everyone together. How's everyone doing?
I'm doing good. Glad to join. Excited for things to get started finally again.
Yep, fired up for this series, and a long wait. 4 days is too long, and even longer for Cleveland, so I know how that feels.
Just to clarify, the first person who spoke was Jacob, the second person was Brad, in case you didn't know that beforehand. All right, let's get to the very important question. Are you happy this is the TNT series, or would you rather it be the ESPN series? Brad, you can get us started on that.
I don't know, honestly. It depends on how much Reggie Miller we get, I guess is the question. If Reggie's not involved, then I'll be thrilled that it's a TNT series. Otherwise I can take it or leave it.
It's always more fun, this is Jacob. It's always more fun to be on TNT, I think, than ESPN. Like, you know, people are always talking about TNT, you enjoy the comicalness of the halftime shows and things like that. So that's always kind of the fun part of it all, is to see Charles and Chuck and those guys go back and forth and whatnot. So, you know, sure, it's fun. I'm just glad to be here, man.
What kind of campaign do we need to get to have Brent Barry call these games instead of Reggie Miller or Chris Webber? I'll pay some of my own money. I have a dime sitting right next to me. I will put that.
We should get Zach Luby on board with that. Zach's got the Fire JB account on Twitter, so he's the guy. He's the guy to go to. I think that's, he should organize the troops.
Yeah, I guess Brent Barry did one of the Hawks games in the Wizards series. I think it was a home game, so I was at the game and missed it, but I saw him down there and got nothing but positive reports. I know Brent Barry. I always enjoy Brent Barry, so I'm all in for that.
Let's start with the Cavs. We just saw a Clippers team that kind of collapsed slash maybe fatigue set in, and it just became a little too much after a seven-game series, then another seven-game series. The Cavs had it a little easier, but they're also lacking depth. Jacob, how worried are you about that with all the injuries piling up and what they've had to go through to this point to get to the conference finals?
Yeah, it's been a war of attrition through 10 playoff games, obviously, with Love gone, and who knows what Irving's status might be in the near future here. But, you know, obviously they're worried, but I think they just played their best defense all season at the end of that Game 6 against Chicago. So that's the thing that gives you optimism, is that even when they're forced to go those very tight lineups of just having a few healthy guys, that bench of Shumpert and Dele and Tristan, we're able to play some phenomenal defense. So that's the thing that gives you some optimism. But I think both these teams right now are playing with kind of short rotations compared to what they had in the regular season, with Steph Lucas being out too. So every team's getting beat up a little bit. I don't think the Cavs are necessarily at a situation where they don't have, they still have their seven guys-ish that they play in eight if Irving's healthy. And that's, you know, then the playoff times, most teams do that essentially. It's just about food. Really cold, or who's really, really banged up out there?
Do we think LeBron guards Damari Carroll in this series, right? They don't use him to chase around Korver, do they?
I don't think he'll just guard Carroll. Like, as we saw against the Bulls, like, LeBron guards whoever is best for him to match up against during a certain time frame. He went against Rose in several occasions. He would guard Butler. He would see with the Cavs. Became notorious by the last few games of just switching just about anything, anytime, anywhere. So I don't think we'll see him on Korver per se that much. That doesn't seem like a thing that he'll do in terms of chasing around a guy. But I think we'll see him match up against ball handlers, keep guys bringing the ball to court, Teague, Schroeder, or Carroll, or just about anyone. You know, he could be a fit to see in rare occasions against a guy like Millsap if he's playing along the perimeter at times.
Brad, do you think if Cleveland continues with that all-switching strategy they started to show against Chicago, do you think that's advantageous or a disadvantage to what Atlanta wants to do offensively?
I think it definitely could be helpful, depending on the lineups that the Hawks play. You guys talked about LeBron matching up against a specific player. I think with at least I guess the Hawks starting five, it's really tough to guard them without switching, because everybody can shoot from the outside, and obviously you don't want to lose guys like Korver. And it's really tough to guard him without switching because of the fact that he's running along so many screens. So yeah, I would expect that's probably Cleveland's best bet defensively, especially against sort of base sets for Atlanta. Could begin to get in some trouble if they get Teague running well on the high pick and roll. But aside from that, I think Cleveland's probably best to continue that strategy.
The Hawks, to me, it kind of feels like they're Kyle Korver making shots away from kind of being back to what they were during the regular season. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, I largely agree. I mean, Korver hasn't been quite as bad as it seems like he's been. I mean, he's still made 35% of his threes in the playoffs. That number went down in the second series. But yeah, I mean, when you jump from him making almost 50% of his threes in the regular season down to 35, that's obviously a big jump. And that will account for the dip in the offense. It's more than just Korver, though. I mean, both point guards have had trouble making shots. Horford's jump shot's kind of come and gone. So I think it's kind of unfair to pin it all on Kyle. But at the same time, his swing in the regular season to the playoffs is so significant offensively, just in terms of sheer volume. We're talking about that with threes that are not going in versus going in. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the dip can be explained by Korver being sort of cold, at least by his standards.
Jacob, I didn't look up the numbers for this, but it feels like Mozgov and Thompson played a good chunk of minutes together in that Chicago series and were pretty successful. Is that something you think they continue to go along with, or is the Hawks a matchup where maybe it makes sense for them to go smaller more often?
I think we'll see a lot of those smaller lineups that I think, you know, in game six we saw some of that too. But I think we'll see some smaller lineups with Tristan at the center, just kind of, I think, out of necessity. And the one game that Mozgov played against the Hawks as a member of the Cavs, the game was over practically by the end of the first quarter, but Mozgov was not a fit. That was not something that worked out well. So I think it could that's a thing that will be a big difference in just the stylistic changes of playing that Bulls team with three guys down low, with Taj, Noah, and Gasol, against this Hawks team with no one like any of those three. So yeah, I would be surprised to see Mozgov play as many key minutes as he did last series.
All right, this is one I want both of you to answer. The regular season meetings, Atlanta took 3 of 4. We'll start with Jacob. How much is there anything to take from that, or is this just a new slate, completely different teams?
Almost all those games are blowouts. That's the funny thing about the Cavs against almost every Eastern Conference contender during the regular season, is there are very few close games. And obviously with the Cavs, there's always the huge caveat of how terrible they were the first half of the season at 19-20. So there was one, like, early on in the year that they exchanged games where they both went insane for three-point range, which kind of shows the potential of these two teams. But I think the game that really, you know, was the playoff-like atmosphere was that one in March, where Mozgov and all the new additions were there, and you kind of felt this meant something. And that was in early March, and the Hawks' defense put the Cavs completely out of sync, and they couldn't complete any kind of pass. They couldn't get the ball into the post. They really had no at all system to their half-court offense, and that was a 15-point lead that by the end of the first never got close. So that gives you a little bit of worry and fright as a Cavs fan in terms of their ability to do offensive things, which is something that became a struggle for both them and Chicago at times, sort of stretches on end during that series. So that's the one game I would put a lot more weight to, and it's not as favorable to the Cavs.
Yeah, I would wholeheartedly agree. I was definitely going to bring up that game in March as the one to sort of take as a serious indicator. I'm notorious in thinking the season series don't matter a whole lot. So much changes from the regular season to the playoffs. But yeah, if there was one to point to, I think it's that one. The Hawks changed their defensive coverages in that game and definitely flustered Cleveland early on. LeBron and Kyrie both didn't have great games that night. But as far as an indicator, I think that's still sort of a small, obviously a small sample size, and both teams are different now than they were then. I know Cleveland's, like Jacob said, that game included Mozgov and those guys, but the Hawks are not playing quite as well as they were then either. And now that the Hawks sort of unveiled that attacking strategy on defense, and Cleveland's got almost a week to prepare for it, you'd imagine David Blatt and company have some adjustments to unveil when the playoffs get going.
How do you think each team goes about picking apart the other and trying to take advantage in maybe a way we haven't seen yet in this playoff set?
I think you've seen a lot of everything from the Cavs in these playoffs, to be honest, from the ups of the early Boston series with Kevin Love and the offense flowing well, to the downs of those early Chicago games and stagnant offense and terrible defense. So we've seen, it's been, although they've only played 10 games and haven't had as many down moments as, say, Atlanta, for example, you've seen a lot of up and down and a lot of struggles from this Cleveland team still. So in terms of a new look or something, I think we'll see perhaps what we saw at the end of that fourth quarter, at the end of that game against Chicago. That was something really tantalizing. That was something that we've only heard in kind of fables about LeBron playing defense and of this team being a very good defensive team. And to match up against Atlanta, something that this team didn't do very well against defensively, they just kind of outshot them in the one game early on in the year where they made the first 11 threes. To match up against Atlanta, you have to play completely tight defense where you're not letting Korver run free. You're matching up well against a guy like Millsap. So that's the thing that I would be interested to see is can that defense switch at all times, really intense defense they played in those last three quarters against Chicago. Can that last? Is that sustainable? That's the one thing that I think will be interesting to watch as we go in here.
Yeah, there's obviously several things. I think we've already touched on a little bit, but I think the Hawks will try to put Mozgov and hopefully even Kyrie in the pick and roll with Teague and Horford. Horford's such a dynamic mid-range shooter, and that's not Mozgov's strength, obviously, is getting out that high. And, of course, that is all contingent on Teague and even Dennis Schroeder playing better than they did in the previous series. But if they can sort of take advantage of Kyrie's defensive unwillingness at times, and Mozgov's obviously isn't quite as good away from the rim as he is towards the rim, that could be something to watch. And also getting it seems simple, but getting Korver quality looks, he's been doing Korver things with 4 days off, and Cleveland doesn't have quite the rotation of guys to throw at him than Washington did. I would suspect that we see a lot of Shumpert, but when Shumpert's not on the court, maybe JR, and that's not an ideal matchup for the Cavs. And Korver also led the Hawks in minutes in the last series with almost 40 a game. So I think we'll be seeing the Hawks definitely trying to get him going early off the heels of a down series against Washington.
One problem is with Shumpert, he's a much better on-ball defender than he is off-ball. I could see him struggling with someone like Korver, and that's not really JR's strength either. So the Hawks have an interesting dilemma in front of them with how they want to defend him. On Kyrie, I think that's something we probably need to talk about a little bit. Jacob, Derrick Rose might be a tougher individual matchup, but is the way the Hawks play going to make him maybe even more vulnerable than he was against Chicago?
Certainly. That's the one thing you would worry about, because they tried to hide him on Dunleavy, and it worked to some degrees by the end of the last few games. But at times, Dunleavy still killed this Cavs team, and that's not to say of how much Rose, even as good as Dellavedova played in that last game, Rose at times just overpowered him. And so that's concern when you talk about the Cavs. It's always been, can they defend opposing point guards? And Jeff Teague had his times against this team. So it's a concern. It's a concern over whether Irving's healthy, and if not, can Dellavedova play that many minutes? And what do the Cavs do at point guard? Because Dellavedova played that entire second half, practically, if I recall. So it will be interesting, because this team, besides just switching, doesn't have very good defensive principles. They are confused often. They lose guys in transition. They are not great chasing guys around screens, as however many open shots Dunleavy had in that series is a test to, or Butler with all of his threes that he got off. So that's the big concern. That's the big question mark, is whether this team can chase and how they can play defense if Dellavedova's not on the court.
Brad, you had to get pretty excited listening to those weaknesses right there.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to speak for all of the Hawks fans. Cleveland's the team that I didn't want to see in the East.
But nobody wants to see us.
Right, I mean, but at the same time, I don't feel like it's as if it's an unwinnable series for the Hawks because of, you know, the loss of Love is big. But even then, there are enough things for Budenholzer and those guys to dig into and take advantage of that I feel like it's a very live series, even with LeBron on the other hand. And, you know, that's all you can ask for, I guess.
Who has the bench advantage in this series? Brad, give your shot first.
Boy, I definitely would have said Atlanta if you asked me 3 weeks ago. But the Hawks bench has really been sort of ugly. It was better in the Washington series than it was in the Brooklyn series. But without Fabio Cephalosha, it's really been kind of an adventure. Dennis Schroeder's been really up and down. And outside of him, you're talking about Kent Bazemore, Parantic, and Mike Muscala. None of those guys are what I would say are above average bench players in the NBA right now. So it could be an adventure. I think the loss of Thabo looms doubly large in this series. When he went down, you know, it was still in the regular season, and we were still talking about how that would affect the Cavs in a potential playoff series because Cephalosha would have been the guy to throw at LeBron outside of DeMar Carroll. And without him, you're looking at Kent Bazemore, maybe even Paul Millsap on LeBron. Neither of those is ideal whatsoever. So, yeah, I'm not terribly confident about the bench, but there were a couple signs in the last series that are somewhat encouraging.
Jacob, we'll get your answer on that. I just want to ask a follow-up about Schroeder real quick to Brad. What's the – as Budenholzer, I know we said that Jeff Teague told him to play him, but he seems to be getting a lot of crunch time minutes, whether it's replacing Teague or playing with Teague. That seems to have increased a little bit. Any other explanation to why?
It certainly has increased. I think Bud has kind of made the conscious choice, at least late in games, to go with Schroeder over Bazemore more than anything else. Bud seems to trust that 2-point guard lineup ahead of using Bazemore in the fourth quarter, and the Hawks are notorious about avoiding keeping their starter, well, you know, avoiding playing their starters a lot of minutes. Basically, Bazemore's been so ineffective offensively that Bud has chosen to roll with Schroeder and Teague together over using a backup wing. There are pluses and minuses to that. Schroeder is really, really can be dynamic off the dribble and creating his own shot, but at the same time, he's often out of control. He's 21 years old, and that, you know, that reveals itself from time to time. And also defensively, you're talking about having Schroeder and Teague play together, especially, is difficult because you have to try to hide one of those guys on a bigger offensive player, and that can sometimes be an adventure. But yeah, Schroeder's highs are very high and his lows are very low, and it's kind of a day to day thing.
Jacob Dellavedova obviously played really well in that game. Sexton's also been pretty solid during the playoffs. James Jones has been making some threes. How do you think the guys that the Cavs still have available to them will hold up against the Hawks?
It's kind of funny we've been having this conversation about which bench is better when the Cavs bench is literally J.R. Smith, James Jones. That's pretty much it because as much as Cavs fans rattled for Kendrick Perkins minutes or whatever that was.
Wait, hold on.
The last two series.
Cavs fans really wanted Kendrick Perkins to play?
We're brutal sometimes. We're so desperate and things like that. When there's a hard foul, you'll see a really bad portion of Cavs Twitter just rattling some heads. So I hate it. He doesn't. He shouldn't play ever. There's no reason for him to be on the court pretty much ever unless it's like a last minute blowout. So, and then there's Mike Miller, who that experiment was so bad too. And Sean Marion's got nothing left in the tank. So this is a three-man bench, and it's funny we're even having debate with the Hawks, with all the different guys they still even have around without Cephalosha. But on the Dellavedova topic, you don't know. He was obviously not this good in the regular season, and there were lots of times we were questioning whether he was a real rotation player in the NBA, let alone for a team this good as they were down the stretch. So you have concerns about that coming back down to earth a little bit. You kind of are at least a little excited again about the prospect of having a similarly young guy without as much experience. There's some thoughts that he'll play a lot of key minutes, and it's just a matter of how many based on Kyrie's health and availability.
And this should be fun to watch, right? I have pretty high expectations for this series.
This is going to be as West during conference as it gets in the East. Like, these are the two fun teams. These are the teams that can score the basketball, have really good offensive players, and you hope that it's fun to watch and not as brutal as some of these past few series for both of us have been.
Yeah, I mean, I know national people don't, well, non-basketball Twitter people don't appreciate the Hawks necessarily because it's the Hawks and they've never been good and they're all, it's Atlanta sports, all those things. But this team is a lot of fun, especially when they're making shots, which they've not made a lot of shots in the playoffs. But surviving two rounds without making shots is huge, and I continue to think that they're going to make shots in the series. And obviously watching Cleveland is entertaining in itself. So yeah, this should be easily the most visually pleasing series in the Eastern Conference to this point. And although that's definitely not a high bar, but this should be appointment viewing, I would say.
I thought Hawks Wizards was fun. I enjoyed that series.
It was fun because the games were close and a lot of weird stuff happened. But you know, it was not. Especially offensively, it was kind of a mess on both sides a lot of the time. A lot of defense being played. And in fairness, I mean, the defense was really good for both teams throughout the series, but a lot of just a ton of missed shots. And, yeah, I shouldn't crap on that series in full. It was entertaining because the games were close, and the Hawks had that monster come back in Game 5 and Paul Pierce doing stuff. So there was some fun parts, but this one should be more definitely visually pleasing than the other was.
We don't have the Bulls offense anymore, so
yes,
we won't have like 7-8 minutes in back-to-back games without points. So I would expect for the Cavs this game to be more fun to watch because those games were just brutal at times.
Did when LeBron is at the four, do you think the Hawks give Millsap a chance to guard him, or does that put them in a position to have to do some weird cross switching? Brad, start with you on that.
Yeah, that's kind of been a topic of conversation amongst the Hawks guys. I think they're going to give Millsap a shot at LeBron at some point in the series, if only because they have to. And we talked about Thabo not being available. The other options outside of DeMar Carroll, who will be the primary guy on LeBron, are Kyle Korver and Kent Bazemore. I can't see them throwing Korver on him because they want Korver to run free on offense and use his energy on that end of the court. And Bazemore is just so much smaller than LeBron that it would be a really tough ask, at least for more than a couple of minutes. So we'll see a ton of DeMar Carroll. I mean, I would almost match up DeMar Carroll and LeBron, you know, substitution for substitution. That's how little confidence I have in the other guys trying to go on LeBron on the Hawks team. But yeah, I would go with Millsap over any of the other options, at least in a small for a few minutes at a time.
And yeah, the subbing for, you know, matching up Carroll for LeBron, every substitution is exactly what the Bulls did with Jimmy Butler. I think Butler played 99 out of James' minutes until the blowout of the game.
Yeah,
so it's just a matter of. And I think it has to be Millsap at times. You know, that's just kind of the nature of the beast, too, is that when LeBron gets into those zones where he has to bully someone in the paint, it wears players out. It gets them in foul trouble. And so I think we'll have to see Millsap at stretches of games like that.
Yeah, the one thing I'd say is doing that substitution pattern for Carroll would be out of character for Mike Budenholzer. Not saying he wouldn't do it, but that'd be the first time in 2 years that he's done something like that. So it would be interesting to see what he will do, and especially, you know, LeBron's going to play a lot of power forward. At least I would expect him to in this series. You'll see a lot of him playing that spot. And if Millsap's on the court in that setting, you know, you either have Millsap trying to chase around JR or Shumpert, or you're going to have to put him on LeBron, and we'll see how that goes.
Have Hawks fans been a little bit frustrated with kind of how Budenholzer's, in a way, just treating these like regular season games to an extent with the rotation? I know he's definitely cut back a little bit, but there's a hesitation, and it's been kind of a slow progress of him playing that starting five more together.
Yeah, absolutely. I think... before I say anything else, obviously Mike Budenholzer is very good at his job. he's the coach of the year, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, there's been some frustration, and I'll cop to being one of those people. There's times where it feels like he's still coaching regular season games when he's using three reserves at the same time in the third quarter. You know, you got a lineup with Schroeder and Bazemore and Perrantic on the court in the third quarter, and I'm pulling my hair out because you just can't play those three guys together. But yeah, in fairness, he has ratcheted up the minutes a little bit, especially in the last series. And I think the biggest factor is that the Hawks starting five is so good that anytime it's not the starting five, you want the starting five back on the court. You know, the starting five are, this is not a misprint, plus 16.3 points per 100 in the playoffs. And that's in 213 minutes. The next most used lineup has only played 34 minutes. So you're talking about the Hawks have basically been the greatest team ever assembled when the starters play, and when they don't play, it's really quite ugly. So yeah, I think we've definitely been pining for more of the starters, but Bud is, he's leaning that way a little bit. But yeah, some of the fourth quarter stuff, seeing a lot of Schroeder and Perro in crunch time, it gets to be a bit disconcerting at times.
Speaking of coaching, we probably need to mention David Blatt at some point during this conversation.
That guy, I guess.
So we'll do that now. We know all the high profile stuff that's happened, but just overall, how do you think he has done in his first playoffs?
I'm much better than the popular narrative loves Brad Stevens over in Boston, and I think that to get that sweep and to adjust like they did without Kevin Love was impressive. They didn't let up. That fourth game turned ugly, and that was a little bit on the refs and how that game evolved, and then perhaps not, you know, composing the team a little bit better. But I think overall, you have to give Black credit. This team was down 2-1 against Chicago, and they pulled it out, and that comes down to Blatt, and I think a lot of times we just default to giving the credit to the players like LeBron for turning it on, but I think Blatt has done what he's needed to do to experiment for the tough hand he's been dealt. This is a team that was terrible early on in the season, really, really, really mediocre, and now without Kevin Love and with like a third of Kyrie Irving, that they've been just as good as you might expect, and that sixth game was incredibly impressive. So I think he's been fine, and I think he's adjusted in sort of some nuanced ways to change defensive rotations and to, you know, move Dellavedova around or just to kind of let the players be at times too. And I think that is a coaching thing that is kind of overlooked sometimes. And so to do what he's done so far has been just fine. And I think the people that are calling for him to be fired or, you know, making up excuses about he's a terrible coach is just not enjoying the game of basketball right now.
Let's do our meaningless predictions now. We'll wrap up with that. Who wants to go first? We'll go Brad first since Jacob just talked.
Oh, man. I haven't figured this out yet, but I'll do it here for the first time. I'm going to take the Cavs in six.
Jacob. Oh, you go ahead. Give an explanation.
Just
good idea.
One sentence. I have the Atlanta sports PTSD so badly that I can't pick it. Not with LeBron on the other side. I think the Hawks are very alive to win the series. I said that at the beginning, and I actually believe that. But if you're telling me I got to pick one way or the other, I'll take LeBron all day.
Yeah, and that's what we'll see is if LeBron comes out like he did in Game 4 against Chicago early on in the series, and how the Cavs respond to a hostile road environment on the road to start a series as well. They, you know, fell back in Game 3 against Chicago, and that kind of turned the series around midway through it. So it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, the Atlanta crowd did a really good job in the second half of the season and at times during the playoffs and things like that. So, you know, I'm really intrigued to see how these first two games go. But my prediction as of now would be the Cavs in 7, winning that game in Atlanta to end the series. I think the Cavs Twitter, for all, you know, what they do back and forth, are not giving the Hawks enough credit for being a tough-nosed team that won 60 freaking games this year, and whenever the games were close, the Hawks were making their way to somehow win that game. They weren't the Warriors just blowing teams out all the time, nonstop, but when any game was given close, they were right there all the time, and so that's what I think is dangerous about this Hawks team, is just kind of how competitive they are when they've got their main guys on the court, and we're not giving enough credit to how talented they were and talented they are right now. And so I think this is going to go the distance, and I'll actually end up being in Atlanta for Game 5, so being there for that environment could be a blast.
Oh, what are you, on your travels to Charlotte? You're stopping in Atlanta?
Yeah, I got some family in Atlanta, so it just so happens that I'll be in the city for that night. So hoping to make my way over there and see what could be a really, really fun game.
Did you get tickets yet, or are you going to try and get them down there?
Working on it, my man.
Come say hello when you make it to the building.
Absolutely. Love to meet the infamous Hawks Twitter.
I've said it all year, so I'll be the outlier here. I'm going to take the Hawks in seven. I said if these two teams played in the playoffs, I thought Atlanta would be the more cohesive team from being together for longer, and that the Cavs kind of have to go through that process, and this is going to be a stumbling block before, as they go forward, they get even better and better and better, unfortunately, for anyone else who roots for teams in the Eastern Conference. But so I'm gonna stick with the Hawks and say they pull it out and we get a nice little Warriors Hawks finals.
Bless you.
To be honest, I'm glad we just didn't lose to Chicago. I remember talking to you at the end of the podcast about how depressed Cleveland would be if we had lost in the semis to Chicago of all teams. So I'm glad we survived that pass, and no matter what, we'll lose a 60-win team somewhere along the road. So still would be a disappointment in Cleveland if a LeBron team loses in the East ever, but not as much as it would be last week.
We can reconvene this group for a podcast after Jim Harbaugh in Michigan ruins Urban Meyer's undefeated season Thanksgiving weekend.
I would love that, obviously. It's not going to happen in any way, shape, or form, but we can all dream, Brian.
Stop with that negativity.
I forgot about you too in that.
Yeah, I waited till the end to bring it up. I was like, I can't let this podcast go without bringing this up.
Well, you know, I'm at Oregon. I was at the championship game this year, so that was a blast. It's been a fun 13 or so years, guys.
Did you wear like a half and half shirt?
I was one of those really obnoxious fans that wore gray in the Oregon student section.
Oh man!
So
that's strong.
Did you drink in celebration or sadness after the game?
Oh, yeah, total celebration. I was going to drink in celebration either way, whether it was with my classmates and whatnot, or with my family and friends that all came down too. So it was my whole family went down for the game. It was insane.
I went to ASU. If Michigan played ASU, I'd root for Michigan. I wouldn't even have a hesitation.
Yeah, that's family. That's what I grew up as. I've only been in Oregon for 9 months, so that's what it was. But that Michigan team, huh?
Our basketball team's gonna be pretty good.
Yes.
I don't know.
Let's talk about basketball.
I don't know what the football is. I've never heard such a thing. All right. What do you guys? You guys didn't get. Jacob, what do you got doing that you want people to say?
Just check out the good stuff over at Nylon Calculus, and then Waiting for Next Year has been doing some really good stuff all throughout the playoffs. So I haven't been doing too much because I'm in the middle of some finals here and whatnot, but check out, obviously, waitingfornextyear.com.
Oh, schoolwork, Jesus.
Yeah.
Brad, can you go ahead?
Just normal stuff right now. We've got to fill the 4-day gap between two series. So tons of stuff at Peachtree Hoops, roundtables, Q&As, breakdowns, everything you need for the Hawks, PeachtreeHoops.com, and we got you covered.
All right, good stuff, guys. Thank you very much. Always appreciate it. And that wraps up the Eastern Conference Finals preview on the Podium Game Podcast.